From the New York Times, I'm Michael Barbaro. This is The Daily. Today, 1 week ago, President Trump was accused of being a tool of Vladimir Putin, filled with admiration for the Russian leader, defending him from critics, and eager to become his ally. Now, just 1 week later, Trump says the relationship is at an all-time low. What is going on with the U.S. and Russia? It's Thursday, April 13th.
Good evening. We just came from a productive meeting of about 2 hours with President Putin. We frankly discussed the current state of U.S.-Russia relations. There is a low level of trust between our two countries. The world's two foremost nuclear powers cannot have this kind of relationship.
Secretary of State Rex Tillerson is in Moscow at a historically tense moment for the two countries. So is my colleague, David Sanger.
It's been a long day. I got in around 4 in the morning and slept for a couple of hours. Then the day has been basically flat out since about 9 a.m. and we're no place close to done.
So, David, I want you to walk me through this pretty extraordinary day. It seems to start with it not being at all clear whether Vladimir Putin is going to meet with Rex Tillerson.
Today was a day of sort of power games that are not unusual in the world of diplomacy, but are particularly common when you're dealing with Vladimir Putin. Every time a Secretary of State and sometimes even President Obama would be working toward a meeting with President Putin, there was always this sort of dangling for a while to determine whether the meeting would happen, and if so, at what time, and to make it clear that it was going to happen on Putin's schedule, not on anybody else's.
So he literally wouldn't set the time? He would sort of leave things in limbo?
That's right. And Mr. Tillerson today did not head over to the Kremlin until sort of 6 in the evening. The Kremlin hadn't made it clear whether they would meet with him at all and suggested that it sort of depended on how well he did with the foreign minister who he was meeting, Sergei Lavrov.
And David, are you being shuttled around not knowing when or if a meeting will happen? Is that your day?
We were given a time for a news conference that we knew was completely fictional, and it turned out we were right. And by the end of the day, the small motorcade of vans from the U.S. Embassy that was supposed to pick us up after couldn't even get through the Russian guards.
Jeez.
So we were all out on a freezing street calling Ubers. And your Uber app from Washington works in Moscow.
So it feels, David, like Tillerson arrived in Russia at a moment of significant tension in this relationship between the Putin administration and the Trump administration. And I want you to just talk a little bit about that.
Well, we're at what Mr. Tillerson himself referred to today as a low point in relations. And he was absolutely accurate in saying that. We are also at a point where the United States fears the revival of a Cold War.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't think it's going to be a Cold War of the kind that we had the last time, because Russia today is a fraction of the power of the old Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, we are no longer pointing more than 10 or 12,000, or in some cases, many more thousand nuclear weapons at each other. We're down to 1,500 each. That's plenty. But at the same time, you have seen in what Putin has done in Syria, a situation in which Putin himself has said, I am not ceding the Middle East to American influence. I'm going to be a player as well. And that's basically what the battle with Tillerson in this first meeting is all about. And this is the first encounter, face-to-face encounter, between a senior member of the Trump administration and Vladimir Putin. And it's not the encounter we had expected.
Right.
We had expected one that would be based on the Trump concept that Russia
right.
was the one country with whom he could rebuild a relationship.
I mean, even a week ago, this looked all extraordinarily different. So how and why did things flip so dramatically and so fast?
It's a very good question. And it flipped in part, I think, because President Trump reacted understandably to to those very emotional pictures right. of kids dying of sarin gas.
I mean, do you think that Trump genuinely believed that Russia could make for a good ally to the United States and then Syria happened?
I think that Donald Trump sees the world in a very transactional way, which is not surprising for somebody who had been a real estate developer, where you move from one transaction to another and they're not all that related. And suddenly, in a series of transactions, he's been shocked to discover how the Russians act around the world. And he's come to some fairly obvious conclusions about how you have to go respond to that. What worries me here is just from watching Mr. Tillerson operate, and I think he's a fairly cautious operator, is that we've gone from a president, President Obama, who had a long-term plan for Russia, but was not willing to go step in and knock them back a bit in a place like Syria, to a president in Donald Trump, who is more than willing to go out and knock them back in a place like Syria, but who does not yet have a long-term plan of any kind.
So a lot of building tension came to a head just in the last couple of days, because the Trump administration accused Russia, not just of being in Syria and being a kind of a nettlesome ally, but of covering up Syria's role in these chemical attacks. How did all of that get dealt with today in these meetings?
It got dealt with in these meetings, Michael, by a determination by each side that they were going to stick to their accounting of the facts.
Hmm.
And what was remarkable was that when Mr. Tillerson left the Kremlin and held a news conference with Mr. Lavrov, they described completely different worlds. Lavrov said, We need an investigation into what possibly might have caused this chemical weapons attack.
The perspective from the United States, supported by the facts that we have, are conclusive.
Tillerson said, we know what causes
that the recent chemical weapons attack carried out in Syria was planned, and it was directed and executed by Syrian regime forces.
From a Syrian base at which you, Mr. Lavrov, have roughly 100 Russian
right.
troops.
And we're quite confident of that.
How could you have not known that they were taking off with chemical weapons?
David, was this a tense exchange between the two of them?
It was clearly a bit tense. Tillerson is the opposite of John Kerry, quite terse. Lavrov, on the other hand, he goes off at great length, and he decided that the moment had come to give a bit of a lecture about what had gone wrong in the American attempts to change regimes around the world. And he said, in each of these cases, what you went into with whatever best intentions turned into a complete and utter mess. And so when you tell us that you want to get rid of Assad, all we think of is because you've done this so well before.
So this fixation on trying to oust this or that dictator, an authoritarian or totalitarian leader, as well known to us, and we know how it ends. A successful ouster of a dictator is for me very hard to remember. If you have any examples, I'd be glad if you could share them with me.
And you know what? When you're sitting there, and even when you've covered it, it's not a bad argument. Our record is not fabulous.
I mean, David, given the fact that you're describing two people that seem to be inhabiting alternate realities, even though they're in the same rooms in Moscow, where exactly does it leave us?
Well, it leaves us in some places we didn't expect to be. If you had listened to Donald Trump,
I would treat Vladimir Putin
on the campaign trail
firmly, but there's nothing I can think of that I'd rather do than have Russia friendly as opposed to the way they are right now, so that we can go and knock out ISIS together with other people and with other countries. Wouldn't it be nice if we actually got along with people? Wouldn't it be nice if we actually got along, as an example, with Russia? I'm all for it.
In about a week and a half, that has all disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
What we have seen, I think, is the United States and Russia going back to the kind of contentious relationship it had in the Obama years. And whether Donald Trump can work that out, I do not know.
David, you interviewed Trump many times as a candidate about foreign policy, and I get the distinct sense that you felt he was far more comfortable thinking about the U.S. economy and domestic issues. And so now that you've watched this change in his engagement and even some of his positions about Russia, about whether to deal with Syria, is he becoming more comfortable, more confident, more just engaged with all this? And is that meaningful?
Well, he's certainly becoming more engaged with it. And I think like all presidents, he will find it both fascinating and the one area where he can operate alone. Remember, he had come out of months of significant frustration. He had an immigration effort that the court stymied. He had a plan to replace Obamacare that Congress stymied. He is nowhere right now on his tax plan. And suddenly along comes the Syria crisis and he discovers, hey, with a single order, I can launch missiles all by myself. And you can. And that's an enormous power if you're president. The problem is launching a missile attack is a relatively easy thing to do. Coming up with a workable plan to end the Syrian civil war that has gone on for 6 years and cost well over 400,000 lives, now that's a really hard thing to do. And I think there is still significant doubt inside this administration about how deeply they want to get into it. Because frankly, America first means not getting involved in all these wars in the Middle East. And that's part of what Trump said to us during those interviews.
David, it feels like all of this is diffusing the conversation around collusion between Trump campaign and Russia. And you spent a lot of time thinking about that, investigating it. Do you think that one outcome of all of this is that there's going to be less heat around Trump and his team and questions about their ties to Russia, given the aggressive stance they're taking now against Putin?
Well, certainly if you are a skeptic about Donald Trump or you oppose Donald Trump, you think that a lot of this has been ginned up to distract from the election controversy. I actually don't agree with that because Bashar Assad was murdering his people years before the Russians meddled in our election. And at this rate, he's going to continue doing so for some time. But what is certainly true is that Donald Trump's now paying attention to it, and I think has probably found that this does divert the conversation somewhat. It also takes away the argument that he is somehow bending over backwards to accommodate the Russians. So he's probably not unhappy with a confrontational approach. Vladimir Putin's in somewhat the same situation. He's got people who are unhappy with the economy, unhappy with his crackdown on civil liberties. So for Putin, declaring that you are taking on the United States is also the way to power, freedom, and prominence. And that's a bad dynamic when you have two superpower leaders who believe the moment may have come where each one of them profits at home from turning the other one into a significant adversary.
David, it is extremely late, and you're not done at all tonight, so I'm going to let you go. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much.
Bye. On Wednesday afternoon, following the meetings in Moscow, President Trump made an explosive suggestion. He said it was unlikely that Russia didn't know in advance about the Syrian government's plan to use chemical weapons on its people. We'll be right back.
When you think about the 2024 election, how do you feel?
Sickened.
Hey, y'all. Estelle Herndon here, host of The Run-Up from The New York Times. And recently, I've been asking this question a lot.
I feel tired. I feel a little scared.
And I've been hearing the same sort of answer in reply.
We have an incompetent incumbent and a Republican that I'm not going to vote for. Yeah.
When voters look ahead to the 2024 presidential election, they feel apathy, dread, that it's just a mess. The Run-Up is your guide to that mess. Each week,
I am going to vote for the man with the most impeachments and the most indictments.
We'll talk to voters, elected officials.
I believe America can do for anyone what she's done for me.
And the candidates themselves, all to help you better understand this moment in American politics. The Run-Up is new every Thursday. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Here's what else you need to know today.
With those in favor of the draft resolution contained in document S/2017,
/315, please raise their hand.
Russia has single-handedly blocked a United Nations resolution backed by the United States, France, and Britain, condemning Syria's use of chemical weapons and demanding that the government of Bashar al-Assad cooperate with an investigation into the attack.
The draft resolution has not been adopted, owing to the negative vote of a permanent member of council.
It was the eighth time that Russia has vetoed a UN resolution relating to Syria since the start of that country's civil war in 2011. And
you have no idea how many people want to hear the answer to this. I have watched speculation for 3 days now on what that was like.
When did you tell this?
But I'll tell you.
Before dessert?
But I will tell
In an
you.
Interview with Fox News, President Trump described the precise moment at Mar-a-Lago last Thursday night.
I was sitting at the table. We had finished dinner. We're now having dessert.
When he informed his guest, the president of China, Xi Jinping.
And we had the most beautiful piece of chocolate cake that you've ever seen. And President Xi was enjoying it.
That he had launched a missile attack on Syria in response to those chemical attacks.
So what happens is I said, we've just launched 59 missiles heading to Iraq.
Well, you headed to Syria.
Yes, heading toward Syria. And I want you to know that.
Finally, President Trump says he has changed his mind about NATO. Throughout the presidential campaign, he said that the 68-year-old security alliance designed to protect Europe from the Soviet Union was obsolete in an era of global terrorism. On Wednesday, Trump met with NATO's Secretary General at the White House.
The Secretary General and I had a productive discussion about what more NATO can do in the fight against terrorism. I complained about that a long time ago, and they made a change. And now they do fight terrorism. I said it was obsolete. It's no longer obsolete.
That's it for The Daily. I'm Michael Barbaro. See you tomorrow.
. 1903 to 2043, our friend, the BLT, will finally lose the battle with soil erosion. We'll always remember savory bacon on a bed of lettuce and tomatoes, drizzled with mayo. It'll be a truly tragic loss.
Our favorite sandwich ingredient needs healthy soil to survive, but the soybean oil needed for mayo could be gone by 2043. That's why Hellmann's is committing $30 million towards regenerative agriculture for soybean farming in North America. Learn more at SaveOurSandwiches.com.